Blog Talk Radio.
It's been about 3 weeks since we got together and did an episode of When Black Men Talk, you know, the provocative talk that will explore the male suspect of life, love, and relationships, and shoot for an honest self-evaluation, of course, not shying away from some things need to be said. But we need a little summer, I guess, wind down. Past that now, we're into September, and we're going to get back to kind of doing an episode at least once a week. But I think those that have been spending time going back and checking some of the past episodes out, I appreciate it. And it says a lot when we can basically have shows that people want to go back and re-listen to. Sometimes folks listen more to the old shows than listen to the new shows. Very thankful. I'm Mark Elliott, soon to be joined by Mr. DeMaurice and Mr. Charles. We've been doing this for quite some time. We have two guests this evening as well. We're going to spend some time tonight with the focus on forgiveness. You know, we've done it before, but I don't think this is a subject that you cannot stop covering, because there's always a different angle, a different side, and a different way to look at it. So tonight we're going to take that on for side. Let's bring in one of our guests this evening. She's been here before. Welcome her back again, Lady Teixeira. How you feeling?
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Hello. I'm good. I'm good in yourself. Thanks for having me back.
Well, no, thanks for coming back. And as I say that, let me bring in, let me get the board going here straight. Give me a little difficulty, but we'll get that soon. I believe we're also joined by, I call it a luxury. So when I say that, I'm talking about Marcy. Marcy, how you feeling? Maybe the board's giving me a little tough time. I assume at some point the producers will get her in. And get Mr. DeMaurice. Mr. DeMaurice, maybe you're there. How you feeling, sir?
I'm feeling great, man. I'm feeling great. Hello, everybody.
Hey, Mr. Charles, I'm sure. Maybe that's Mr. Charles. And that's not him. That's not Mr. Charles. He's not here yet. Let's try Marcy one more time before we kind of get things kicked up. Marcy, are you available? Luxury. If not, she'll come soon. All right, let's move on. I want to salute a young man that I came across that I thought was rather interesting. That this cat here is 8 years old, from Sean Smalls of Mountain, North Carolina. This cat basically started his own juicing business September last year. You figure when the pandemic was kind of going pretty strong, his mother helped him kind of start a business. And he's looking to basically have his juice bottles move into the shelves of Whole Foods, Targets, and others. And now that I want to salute him, I want to salute his mom as well, because the mere fact that 8 years old, she's allowing this young man to start his own business, and basically as he starts to age, he would not be looking for a job. He's already created himself a job. Beautiful stuff. Let's try this one more time. I think I might have it. Hello, Marcy. Are you with us? Well, guess not. All right. This we do this live, so we take whatever happens and we keep moving. As I said earlier, I want to speak on the word forgiveness, and I want to kind of spend some time kind of going through it. Forgiveness, conscious, deliberate decision to release feelings of resentment or vengeance towards a person or a group who has harmed you. Regardless of what they actually deserve your forgiveness or not, forgiveness does not mean forgetting, nor does it mean condoning or excusing the offense. What I want to do basically is take that paragraph right there. I'm going to come to you first, Ms. DeMaurice. And I want you to pull a word out of there and basically use that word to describe why we, maybe others, have a tough time basically feeling forgiveness when it comes to doing such.
I think the word that I think about is pride. Our pride, I think, keeps us from forgiving folks. And the more prideful we are, the more stiff-necked we are as far as looking at forgiveness as a way of, you know, healing and moving on. We tend to hold on to that energy because our pride won't let us let that go.
Okay. Lady Teixeira, same thing. If you can't take a word out of that paragraph, and kind of explain to us why it seemed like it makes it tough for us to, ourselves personally, or others, to walk the road of forgiveness?
I believe it's the hurt. It's the hurt of whatever happened in whatever situation. And when you're hurt, you can't even see past your hurt for a while. And that will lock you in just a state of mind of not being able to forgive. And hurt will do a lot of different things for a lot of different people.
Good point. Mr. Charles, I want to bring you in this as well. If you can grab a word, sir, and kind of basically explain to us what may keep you or others from basically moving in a direction of forgiveness.
I would say, can you hear me all right, first of all?
Absolutely, bro. Yeah, we got you.
Okay, sure. Appreciate it. I'm not going to cop because the wonderful young lady tells me the word I would have preferred, but I'm going to roll with she said hurt, right?
That's correct.
Okay. I want to put the word I'm going to put out there is trust. Oftentimes, a person that you care about and trust, it's hard to forgive them because you're all in with them, and that's just how it goes often. I've been there a few times. So when you trust somebody, particularly when you're not a person that really opens up to a lot of people, and somebody really disappoints you that way, it's hard to forgive.
Three solid answers. I'm going to take a different route. I'm going to choose the word vengeance because I think a lot of times when we are hurt, we want to respond. We want to react. Sometimes we want to kind of get back and want to get even. And I think also sometimes we think by forgetting and moving on, we're kind of basically allowing that person to get off the hook in a sense. So sometimes I think that there, of course, resentment as well may keep us kind of moving forward. Because as you all three spoke to, a pain of hurt, that's a pain that just sometimes keep reoccurring. Even though the act may happen a while ago, as time goes on, if it's not dealt with, it kind of tends to kind of come back over and over again. I want us to speak on something that occurred in our life. Because, Mr. Charles, you said something happened twice. But I want something that's basically has happened in our life that we want to bring to the forefront in our conversation, where you had to kind of stand back. You was hurt from it. But you had to stand back, look, and observe, and move in forgiveness to move forward. And since you said that happened twice to you, Mr. Charles, I'm going to come to you first, my brother.
Appreciate it. This was something that happened with family, of course, and one particular time, a relative of mine passed away. So we're all at the funeral and whatnot. And prior to the funeral, we were talking about the person that passed away, just kind of remembering them. And one of my relatives said something that was supposedly a secret. Nobody else I knew what she was saying. And she blurted it out right before about the person the day before their funeral. And people were amazed and looking like, what the hell? Why would you say something like that? And I just think it's just the premise of whatever it is. I was always taught that you always try to take care of your family. You may not always agree with them, but you still try to love them. And just the fact that you would say that prior to this person's passing, right before, when nobody really needed to know what you said, it wasn't that vital. And for them to say that, it was just like, man, it took everything I had not to cuss them the hell out. I'm serious. Because that person didn't deserve that. Because they sure in the heck wouldn't have said that while they were alive in their face. Anyway.
Okay. So we take it that you moved in forgiveness and you're beyond this, correct?
Well, yes, I've forgiven them, but I have not forgotten it. How about that?
Okay. Okay. A lady to share, same question to you. Something that's happened in your life where you had to pull back, you know, because we all have different things that take place in our life, but something happened that you had to kind of pull back and stand and kind of observe and move forward in forgiveness.
Okay, this is, woo God, that's what I'm going to say, woo God to this one, because I'm going to open up a little bit more. Currently, I'm in the process of a divorce, and being in the process of a divorce, There's been a lot that has happened to cause me to go the route to file a divorce. And currently, my husband and I still live in the same house. And it's amazing to me that as I've seen things transpire in our marriage that has been very hurtful, that actually has caused the marriage to fall apart. I had to say, forgive him, Father, for he know not what he do. I had to take my eye off of me so much and really ask the question, how does God look at him? Because when you're in a marriage and your marriage is falling apart and you're both in the same house, there's a lot of mixed emotions going on. But I just had to take a second back. I just had to look at it differently, and I still look at it differently, knowing that even though I don't feel that he's deserving of certain things, it's the part of me loving the Lord that allows me to look at it differently, if it makes any sense to anybody else, because it's rough. It's being right there when asked that question. I just had to say, ooh, you know, when you're in the middle of it or when you're in the midst of it, the forgiving part is for yourself, not for them.
Absolutely. I commend you for opening up and sharing. I appreciate it. And for also, you know, being in it and finding a way to forgive. And I always kind of felt this in a sense that women are better at forgiving than men. Men tend to look at a forgiveness as a part of their manhood kind of being assaulted because they look at it as a form of weakness. And there is no weakness when you choose to forgive. And for you to stand back and look at your situation and look at him and be able to go, that's amazing. So we're glad that you're here. We're glad that you share. And that's all going to work itself out. It will. Mr. DeMaurice, the same question to you, sir.
Yeah, I got to take a different route because she took mine on divorce. You're taking all our stuff.
It's all good, though. It's all good.
It's all good, though. It's really good. It's really good.
Am I taking all of the men's stuff? Wow, I feel important. I feel, are you praying to this conversation?
I forgive you. I forgive you. it's a buddy of mine that we didn't talk for a long time, and I think he was upset about something that I think I said to him. And here's what it was, and I remember it because I was trying to remember it. I'm promoting a book, and I forget which book I was promoting. I was promoting it, and you tend to have folks who, when they know you, like, hey, send me an autographed copy. Not, I'll pay for one, and you can send it to me. Like, yeah, give me an autographed copy of your book. And I got to a point after, you know, going through this a lot, I'm like, you know, nah, you can buy one, and I'll come and sign it. And he kind of, you know, got in his feelings about, you know, I always support you, this, that, the other, and you don't support me. And so we got into kind of a back and forth confrontation. And I said, you know what, you take care of yourself. And, I just cut off contact. You know, it doesn't take much for me to kind of cut off contact with folks. And we hadn't talked in a while. But I made up in my mind that, you know, I'm not going to hold this against him. I'm not going to use this energy to kind of, you know, be vengeful or prideful about, you know, the disagreements that he had, because I kind of felt that he was kind of keeping score in the friendship. Like, you do this for me, I'll do this for you, you do this for me. And I never do that. And the confrontation we were having was like, and I said to him, it's like, you've been keeping score all these years of what I do for you and what you do for me and all that other stuff. You've been keeping it like a little chart. And that kind of sent him off in another way too. And so I decided, you know, let me just back off it because I don't want to say or do anything to kind of fracture this even more. And I just stopped talking. And maybe a few years, maybe 3 or 4 years later, his dad passed and one of the first people he called was me. And as soon as he called me, I'm like, I'll be right over. You know, it wasn't this, you know, oh, man, you did this, such and such and such. I had long forgiven him. Without even saying I forgave him, you know, I just kind of just held back, you know, not kind of speaking, not kind of, you know, getting in people's space. And I remember we were talking, we were smoking cigars, we were eating, we were sitting down, and he was like, man, I want to apologize for this. I'm like, no, it's no need, bro. He's like, you know, you've been my guy for all this time. We had a disagreement. I said, but I let that go years ago. And he was kind of surprised that, you know, I would do that, that I would kind of, you know, just let it go like that. Because it really didn't matter to me. As soon as he called me, he needed me. I was there. And I'm going to continue to be there. But just having a conversation with him, I was like, man, I let that go a long time ago. I don't know if you were holding on to it, but I wasn't holding on to any of that because you and his father that passed, you know, you guys meant so much to me that, you know, I could never hold a grudge or hold anything back or not forgive you for something. We're boys, we were like brothers, and you know, we go through this as kind of family and things of that sort as friends, but, you know, the love is still there. The relationship is still there. It just took an opportunity for us to kind of be there, and it was sad that it took that. That was the opportunity. That was the kind of scenario that brought us back together to talk about a lot of things. But, yeah, he kind of felt like, and I know that's the way he is, he kind of holds grudges. I wasn't holding a grudge at all because as my brother, I love you. I'm gonna stay there for you. But it's kind of weird how people kind of – I know for me, holding a grudge and not forgiving, it's just too much energy wasted. I can't hold on to that energy. I can't sit around and think about that all the time. So I'll just bless it, as some of the old folks here say, bless it and then let it go. And so and this guy's a deacon in the church. And so when he was like, I kind of kept a little bit, you know, of that vengeance with me. I'm like, no, I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. And I know that it was worrying him more than it worried me. And I'm like, you know, speaking on this energy, if you hold on to that energy, it wears you down. It seemed like he was worn down through it and that he had to let it go at that particular time, not knowing that I had let it go years ago. So that's my little spiel on what I thought about when I thought about this.
Interesting, because a little later, man, I'm going to tie in to mental health, how forgiveness basically plays a part in our mental health. But my one goes back to something Mr. Charles said about the friend member or trust, in that sense, our family member or trust. And mine goes square to my mother, in a sense. And my mother basically, as I spoke many times on the show, raised me to be the man that I am, instilled a lot and gave me a lot and helped me to develop. And with all that being said, there's a period of time when, based on when my mother and father became separated, that the rest of the family basically shunned my father, which I didn't. And my mother took that upon as a sign, I guess, of disrespect to her, or whatever the case may be. And from that point on, she went on a tirade, took cahoots, and joined the band with my daughter at the time, my only child, daughter at the time, mother, to basically work together to turn my daughter against me, to take the love that's been established between my child and myself. They went out of their way to condemn, to break that down. And I'm looking at her and I'm thinking, wow. And it's interesting when someone steps to you, in a sense, when enemies basically come upon you, you're kind of prepared. You're always kind of looking around, and you kind of got your guard up and you're defending. But a family member can easily slide inside because your guard is not up for a family member. You're not basically bracing yourself and kind of looking over your shoulders at a family member. So when a family member comes to basically do harm, to basically do hurt and do destruction, you initially stand back and go, wow. And then you try to basically piece it together and try to understand where it's coming from. And once I understood where it was coming from, You know, she could continue her tirade. And basically what I did is what my grandmother said, to an extent, taught me a while ago, is that if your right arm offends you, you cut it off. So I had to cut her off a little bit and came back and knew that I had to basically, in order to basically continue on being her son, she being my mother, I had to find a way to forgive her. So I went by her house one day, shortly thereafter, and my mother's from the old school. Certain things my mother's not going to say to you. She's not going to basically say, I love you she at that time, and she's not going to basically admit to being wrong about something for the most part. I don't know how old school that is, because we still got that comment today, but that's another show. But anyway, so when I'm talking to her and we're going through some things, she started going back to her childhood. Some things happened in her childhood, some of the stuff I knew already. And she was trying to show me, in a sense, what makes her do some of the things that she did or she has done, not really identifying to me realistically. A lot of it came from, because she's mad at me, basically being a son to my father. Well, I said to her, so, you know, Mom, I'm not really concerned with that. You know, things happen in life. You know, our point is to move beyond it, see it for what it's worth, and move on. And I'm glad I took that stance, because I remember time went on, and as she developed Alzheimer's, and as time went on, I thought to myself one day, I said, you know, imagine if I didn't take that role to forgive, and she came down with Alzheimer's. Where would I be mentally? What would I be thinking? And I remember throughout the process of her basically getting worse and her passing, I can really say my grieving was light. I remember one Sunday, and actually it was a Saturday, when her Alzheimer's kind of initially started going bad, and their church gave her a service. And she at the end of the service, she got up and sung. And at that particular time, at the end of her singing, I became emotional. And because at that time, I knew I was really going not to start to see my mother, who I knew she was, as she started to progress through her Alzheimer's. So when I look back at it, I realize that crying I did that day in that weekend, that was my grieving. When Mom actually passed, I didn't have anything. My tank was empty. And it's, you know, certain people looked at me like there's something. No, it's just that I moved through it long before, and I didn't even realize it. But it all kind of started. If I can tie it back, it starts to go back into that day when I basically sat there and chose to forgive her. So I didn't carry all that. I let all that go. And what she tried to do with my daughter didn't work anyway. It didn't work. So I say that to say sometimes we must approach it in a forgiven sense. I mean, sin is sin. People are going to make mistakes. People are going to do things to try to hurt. It's a part of life. But I look at forgiveness as Lazy Sheriff said, it's better for us to forgive and move on, because when we hang on to it, it harvests inside of us. It does damage, whether we want to believe it or not. I'm going to speak to that a little bit. But the act of forgiving carries some benefits. And I'm going to come back to you, Mr. DeMise, with this one, because you basically said what the old folks said to you. But when you say that, they say and pray to let her go, what are the benefits behind that? When we kind of release it and basically allow it to disperse and move away from us, what does come from that, sir?
You're not burdened with it anymore, because not forgiving is a burden. It's a burden you carry. It's something. It's like an albatross around your neck that you carry. It's in your thoughts. It's written, you know, space in your head for free. And it takes up a lot of energy and time. And so for me, when the older folks hear, and I've heard them say it in other places too, in the South, say bless it and let it go, or bless people and let them go. And that's just what it is. It's like, you know, God bless them. And you just let them, you know, do what they do. And eventually people will come back, and they come back and you can settle it. But as long as you hold on to it, it's an albatross around your neck. It's a burden that you're carrying, and it becomes too heavy. And if you think about it too much, it becomes heavier and heavier and heavier. And you see that person, and you're having all these feelings, and it's just not worth it. And so I know in my life now, and in years of practicing this is that, how do you want to use your energy, Donna? Do you want to use your energy with this, or you want to use your energy in a more constructive way? Destructive or constructive? And so I've always kind of weighed that in decisions that I made. Do you want to carry this? Do you want this to be something that is a burden to you, or you just want to bless it and let it go, live your life? Because you cannot live your life if you're holding on to this to the fullest. And I want to live my life to the fullest.
Hey, to share, I'm going to come to you with this. Before I come to you, I want to say this, though. Here again, I commend you for what you're facing and how you're dealing with it, because I've met people over the years, in a sense, that have been in a relationship or a marriage that hasn't gone well, and they'll come to you and say they're by it, they're past it, but they're really not, because they spend more time, as you start to talk to them, talking about that person, this and that, and it's not settled. So you handling it now, and dealing with it the way that you are, beautiful stuff. But the same question to you, in a sense where when you let go, when you choose to forgive and move beyond it, what are the benefits that come to you?
Well, for me, it's a whole process. You know, it's easier for when we hear that term, you know, bless them, bless it, and let it go, however, you know, the way that you put it. It's harder to do it. It's so much more harder to forgive and let go. You know, for me personally, I've never been one of the type of people that held grudges. I don't like holding grudges. So if it bothers me, I have to learn how to master my way through it. My relationship with God has taught me how to stand on that. You know, give it to me and let it go. But it's been a process, because what happens oftentimes is that we say we let it go, but we're still peeking around the corner trying to figure out how we can still do something about it. And you have to get to a place within yourself to say, you know, okay, I did all that I could do. I kind of sabotaged myself to believing that I could just let it go, but I didn't. But when you get in oneness with God, He allows that for you. And that's what it's been for me. And, you know, understanding that my circumstances or my situation and my marriage has been very hurtful. It's been very, very hurtful. And people would say to me that know exactly what it is that I've had to endure. How do you do it? I say all the time, if I didn't have the relationship that I had with God, there's no way that I would be able to stand in the midst of the storm. It's no way that I would be able to stand that firm and say, okay, you're going to see me through it. Oh, you're going to get me through it. So a lot of things for me is based on my relationship with God. You know, without God, who am I? You know, I remember a time in my life where when I wasn't into the Word of God, I was just being Tashira, you know, T or Tashira, whichever one you wanted on that day. And I wouldn't have been able to do this, let's say, even 5 years ago. But 5 years later, it's the growth. So you got to allow yourself to grow, too. You have to allow growth to come in to be able to be able to pretty much, you know, pray and let it go. Pray and let it go. But you also got to speak it, walk it, and believe it within your own heart that it can be done just like that.
I believe forgiveness basically starts in the heart, and then it kind of travels through the mind, and then that's where sometimes the hesitation hits. Because once your mind gets in and starts to play with it, you kind of hang on to it some and see different things about it. Mr. Charles, the benefit of just basically giving it, setting it down, and letting it go?
I would say definitely, I think, understanding yourself and really regaining control of who you are. And I think it's different for all types of individuals. I say that because I'm not familiar with a family member. They knew my situation with me kind of being what they would call, I guess, like an orphan, because I was like an only child before I got together with my so-called stepbrothers and whatnot. But they had mentioned to me we had a disagreement. They took me in like they were part, I was part of their family, and we had a disagreement. And then it was brought to my attention that they felt like they kind of like saved me. And I was like, really? So anyway, we had that disagreement. But when I understood what was going on and I came to the point of forgiving them, I was reminded of something, and something I should never have forgotten. I was reminded about the lessons that my father taught me about people in general and just family in particular. That when he was gone, nobody ever was going to take care of me again. And I had to stand on my own 2 feet, and I had been doing it. But this particular situation, because it was family, I let my guard down. And I bought into what they were saying. Disagreement comes up, and the person I was talking to really didn't have control of any at all, but they just had their 2 cents. And it just reminded me what my dad told me. And I had to literally, I had to pull back. I had to start reminding myself of where I was at, whose son I was, what kind of man I had been raised to be. And I had my marching orders. I got to get back on point because my dad told me this is how it is. Not saying I could never do that, but I knew at that point, what are you mad for? That's just water under the bridge. You have to forgive that person and let it go. But you also got to get back on to who you are and be true to where our journey, where we're going. And when I saw them later on, kind of bizarre, as you, D. Maurice mentioned, that we had not really spoken or anything, but the person's dad, father, passed away. And I knew I was going to have to go to the funeral. In fact, I was asked to be a pallbearer. And I did it, because that's what you're supposed to do. But then when it came down to a discussion, they really didn't have much to say. But as D. Marie said before, too, I let it go, because I was reminded who I was and what I had to do. I'm on a mission. And that little trivial stuff, not about the passing of the person, but the disagreement or whatever, is trivial to where I'm headed. So I had to get back on Charles time. And once I did that, they kind of looked at me like I was crazy, like I was mad. I said, no, quite the contrary. I got to put you over here because, while we're okay and whatever, you're in the way of my journey. Can't let you get in the way of the journey. You mean me, call me. Other than that, I'm going forward. You going to the left or to the right, I'm going straight ahead. So I would say, control and then also effect as to where you're at, for me in particular, what I had to do and what I had to be, my mindset of getting back on track on what I need to do.
I like that on Charleston. I like that. You know, I was saying earlier that forgiveness has some health benefits, mental and physical, and practice forgiveness can have powerful health benefits. There's been observational studies done, and even some randomized trials suggest that forgiveness is associated with lower depression, anxiety, and hostility. It can reduce substance abuse, basically boost your self-esteem, and, of course, give greater life satisfaction. And I'm not saying we should look at forgiveness as a benefit, but in reality, those factors that you spoke of come from it, and they help deal with it. And when you think about it, in the long term, in the long scheme of things, you know, where you're not basically obedient, you're not forgiving, you're not, you know, trying to forgive, I can see how these things basically would basically show up at your doorstep. Some anxiety, hostility, you know, possible depression. Now, I'm not saying forgiveness is basically the pill to eliminate all that. But I wonder, you know, hearing this, Lady Tashira, hearing that, can this could be a key to start to wonder that forgiveness may be one key to help with those mental problems and mental issues.
I'm here. I'm so sorry. You know, when you're on mute and you're talking, can you say that again? I'm sorry. Can you repeat that?
Yeah. Hey, no problem. No problem at all. We keep things rolling here. We just keep it moving. So don't worry about that. We adapt to whatever happens. It's just no biggie. What I was saying is that basically there's been studies and trials to say that suggest that forgiveness is associated with lower levels of depression, anxiety, and hostility. You know, reducing substance abuse and plays a part in your self-esteem. Basic overall greater life satisfaction. So when I read this, I matched it to the mental health. We did a show a few weeks ago on mental health. But I matched this and I kind of put it together with the sense that I wonder sometimes, and reading that, could mental forgiveness be a key? Not saying it's the pill to basically solve mental health issues, but it can be a key in solving some of the mental health problems that we see people are facing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I totally agree with it. At my nonprofit organization, I had a guest speaker come in, and she did a piece, and it was called Allow Me to Heal, and she works in the mental health field. And she talked about mentally what it is that we have stored and how we have to unpack the luggage. You know, when you go on vacation, you know, we always have that vacation bag that we never unpack. And with forgiveness, it's the same thing. We have to unpack it. You have different layers of forgiveness. You know, you have the forgiveness that you already forgave somebody. You don't even, it doesn't even bother you. You have the ones that you're working. You have the forgiveness, a couple of different sections where you're still work in progress. And then you have the where you haven't even begun to tap the surface. So mentally, we have to be able to do the work with unpacking our own luggage. And then we can get to the forgiveness part of the situation, because it is a mental thing. Everything is mind over matter. And when you have these different afflictions that come upon your life, you don't know how to begin to do it. And mental health is very, very key to anything. When you have a lot of people say, I just want my peace, a lot of people are fighting to get that peace. You know what I mean? You say it, and once again, you say it until you believe it, and before you know it, you walk into it. But it's definitely on a mental health note. And I've learned that, a couple of weeks ago when I had the guest speaker, and it brought me to tears because I wouldn't have been able to equate forgiveness with the mental health of it and unpacking the luggage. And once after you become free of it, then you're able to move on and have a better, prosperous life, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually.
Well said. Very well said. Mr. DeMaurice, can you see forgiveness as a tool in a sense? When you think about it, you know, how God basically wants us to forgive, how he forgives all of us. Can you see it being a tool to basically deal with some of the mental health issues that we see people deal with?
Yeah, I can see that, definitely, because one of the things that people do when they hold on to things, it becomes stressful. And we all know what stress does to your body, your mind, your spirit. So, you know, there are wise folks before us who talk about forgiving and letting go of things because they knew. they truly knew. And so I look at that too, where if you hold on to something that's very negative or against your spirit, then it definitely is going to do something detrimental to you. To your mind, body, and soul. So I can agree with that.
Mr. Charles, can it be a key to basically undo some of the mental health problems that we see people are faced with?
I would agree and say yes also, definitely. I think it's part two of what I consider, as it was put earlier, more or less as part of a release. And I think that's key for a lot of people when it comes to stress or whatever, mental issues or other issues. You know, I think it's important because a lot of people don't have release outlets. They know how to let go of things. Some things you just can't let go because it affects you too much. But I think it's important to have some type of release or releases to put you in a better mind frame mentally. And I always try to do that no matter what it was. If it's exercising, walking, talking to somebody, something, because I think if you build upon it, eventually you can go. Usah, part of that whole release package to let go, and you can get more back to your life, so more comfortable. You don't have those things on top of you all the time, particularly from a mental standpoint.
Now, we spent the good portion of this talking about forgiving others, which is very beneficial. But we at times also must forgive ourselves. And that sometimes is not as easy as it may sound to basically forgive oneself. So I'm come back to you with Mr. Charles and ask, in a sense, how does one go about forgiving themselves in a particular situation?
He was just playing helicopter or whatever it is. But I think part of it starts with understanding yourself, where you were at a particular point, understanding where you are now. Also to the point of realizing sometimes whatever may have happened or whatever you may have concurred or whatever you have done, that oftentimes the situation may have been out of your control. And that's so deep to me, because sometimes we are hard on ourselves because we're like, man, I should have done that, or I wouldn't have done that. I can't believe I let that happen. But if you're not in control of it, it's hard to combat that and deal with that. And therefore, I think you just have to be honest with yourself and realize that. You did what you can do sometimes, and then try to come in a place where you're at peace. And I think that's where, you know, the Lord comes in for me. Because I just kind of go like, man, and I ask for that. And then for me, what happens is a peace comes over me to deal with things that totally seems like they're abnormal or something that doesn't seem possible to deal with. That peace comes over, and then I'm in a good place because now I'm at a point where I have forgiven myself, because oftentimes, like I said, it was out of my control. And I did the best I could at the time.
I love our conversations, man. It's When Black Men Talk. Myself, Mark Elliott, Mr. Charles, Mr. DeMaurice, and ladies and sheriffs joining us for this particular episode. And I love the fact that we can basically take something like forgiveness and go right into it, pull the layers back, and discuss it from different angles. Ladies and sheriffs, I'm going to come to you. How does one go about forgiving oneself, thyself?
Oh, whoa, this is really, really good. As for me, self-inventory. Self-inventory. Oftentimes you're placed in a situation where you have all these different things that are going on, and you feel bad about what it is that you do. So you have to sit back and do self-inventory. And my father has said this to me, look at the part that you play in any situation. And he said it so much, that he used to get on my nerves with saying it. And then until I took his advice, and I had to look back and see what part did I play in any situation. And what I did is I truly said, wow, you know, you could have handled it a little bit differently. Own up to the part that you play in it. And then the other piece of that is be gentle with yourself. Be gentle with yourself. That's been something I've been sticking in for the last several weeks, being gentle to myself. You can't go back and change everything, but what you can do is be gentle with yourself and be at peace. Be in a forgiving place to say, you know, I love me today, or just go about things just differently. And that's where the gentleness comes in. And when you do that, when you're gentle with yourself, you're able to forgive yourself. And you're able to even forgive others in a different type of high vibration, you know. But it's the self-inventory and owning up to the part that you play in any situation, then learning how to be gentle with yourself, and then being able to love yourself and be kind.
I'm going to tell you, Mr. DeMaurice, I don't know if you took your answer, but I know she took mine, man. So if you have another answer, bro, I'm going to come to you, but... I love what she said, because that's just where I was. I mean, you have to basically take inventory of who you are. And for me as well, knowing that most of the time, not most of the time, basically my heart is always in the right place. My intentions are in the right place, and I can't control everything that happens. But knowing that there was no malice in my heart to start out with, it makes it easier for me if things just tend to go wrong. There's been times that people might have hurt their feelings. I'm quick to apologize for that, knowing that that's not what was my intent. That's not what I was trying to do. So if that happened, It wasn't me trying to do that on purpose. So it makes it easy to kind of pull back and understand that. I love what you said as well about what your father said to you, because trust me, I've instilled that in my kids to where probably they probably want to just go up from hearing it, because a lot of times people tell situations, they tell everything that happens, how things took place, but what role did you play? Let's look at the role that you play, how did things happen, because you had to play a role somehow. And sometimes if we can pull back and start to see that, we can learn from that and understand and do better. But a lot of times we understand what comes at us, what we feel, what the other person do, but we don't stop to understand to think that some things we may have done may have provoked things to happen. So that, I love that. And here again, those are some words that I would have kind of said. But Mr. DeMaurice, basically, how do you go about finding a way to forgive yourself, sir?
I remember reading in the Bible that when the Creator forgives, he blots it out of his mind, that it doesn't exist anymore. So if I forgive myself, then why am I holding on to something that the Creator has just blotted? It has no memory of. It didn't make sense to me to hold on to it. The Creator forgot it. You asked for forgiveness, and he blots it out like it never happened. Then why am I beating myself up and holding on to this? If it's okay with the Creator, then it should be okay with me. So that's how I kind of took upon how to forgive myself, is that the Creator is not holding it against me. Why am I holding it against myself?
Yeah, I agree with that as well. We basically kind of went through what I wanted to kind of really kind of deal with forgiveness. So I'm going to move into our question segment a little early. Here's what we do. If we get to this point later this year, we kind of basically do like an open round table of questions. So I'm giving you a chance to come up with one as we kind of start this off. And if you don't have one, that's cool too, but we'll come to you with a question that someone puts out. So I'll go to you first, Mr. DeMaurice. If you have a question that you want us to kind of take a look at and give an answer to, we're all ears, brother.
Yeah, I wanted to throw to the panel, is black manhood being attacked in this day and age? Is black manhood being attacked? And if it is, how do you see it being attacked?
Without question, I would say that it is. It's been attacked in a lot of areas, man. I mean, it's been watered down for quite some time, because black man itself stands strong. It's been many for a period of time, been afraid of it, and since didn't really want to deal with it. So it's been attacked in areas to kind of water it down, to kind of melt it down. And I'm not sure it's ever really been truly respected for what it should be. And even in saying that, I'm not sure that sometimes as men, we understand our manhood. I mean, sometimes you can ask someone, what is manhood to them? And they'll give you a totally different answer to what it is. A lot of times guys think, you know, if you basically can provide, and you know, you have a lot of money, that's your manhood. Sometimes they think sexual prowess is a manhood. So it's much deeper and it's bigger than that. But I think to answer your question, black manhood, yeah, it's under attack, bro, because the strength of it itself, I mean, people are afraid of it. So we basically don't value it ourselves as a race of people. We don't understand it, you know. So, of course, we want to basically kind of see it be dissolved, not understanding that, you know, if you put strong womanhood and blackhood together, we're powerful. But when you take one of them away and you water one of them down, you weaken the whole foundation. And that's where we find ourselves now, in my opinion, as a weak foundation. But yeah, it's been attacked. I mean, I look at it in the sense that basically, you know, when I see what's going on with the proliferation of drugs in our community, that's been going on for a long period of time. I see when men choose not to be men and want to dress like women and be like women, yeah, that's a serious attack on black manhood. When anytime you can show another black young male, you know, something you should be other than a strong black man, that's an attack on black manhood. Anytime you can do that. So that's been going on for a while. And the sad thing about it, it's not others doing it solely anymore. We're doing it to ourselves. We've picked up that candle and that torch, and we're happy to walk and do it and don't care. Mr. Charles, your response, sir.
I would say, yes, I do think it's under attack. I think it has been under attack for a while. I think, unfortunately, sometimes in our community and under in our culture, our folks, we don't, some people just don't know how to deal with that because, one, they've never been taught. They don't understand what it means for a man to be strong, a black man to be strong. And from the society aspect, I just think the way that things are being shown, anytime a man stands up, a black man says something, even if he raises his voice a little bit because he's trying to get a point across instead of arguing or trying to browbeat somebody down or intimidate, it's more or less them just kind of showing their authority from the standpoint of being a man. Not meaning like they're threatening or anything to that effect, but it's taking long. So therefore, anytime you stand up, even when you're being persecuted and mention something with a strong voice, that's being shown as you need to calm that down. You need to be quiet. You need to be more meek. You need to be quiet because that could affect you because they feel like you're threatening them. When it's quite the contrary. I think the other part too is in our families, because oftentimes there have not been men in the family, or the men walk away, or whatever happens, something happens where they're not there. So when they leave, oftentimes we have children that are just kind of out there waiting for somebody to show them something. And no disrespect to the women that raise kids by themselves, nothing but love, because they do what they have to do to raise kids. But sometimes I think at some point a young boy needs a man to kind of guide him through, even if it's not their dad. They need guidance. If somebody understands what they're going through and somebody can kind of at least give them an idea so they can stand tall and stand strong. And oftentimes I think that comes down to that. But when you have those things like that happen, we have a lot of people, and then we wonder why these young boys, run to other places trying to find love and guidance. We wonder why they run to gangs or hang out with so-called people that are not of the same ilk, or they may think that may be criminals even, because deep down inside, they're looking for something, and they go to other places to get it too. They're looking for love, and they don't get it. They just do what they do in order to run to where they can feel comfortable and happy. But it just comes back to that point of we need to be stronger and stand up and understand that we are under attack, have been for years, but despite what's going on in the community and in the climate, we still have the ability to be strong and stand on our own two feet and be leaders, because we represent what we do for our families. Certain times a man just needs to stand up and be a leader without anything ever being said.
I have a question. I'm going to piggyback off this when we're done with this question. I want to piggyback and throw it out. But, ladies, to share your response to the question, please.
Okay, I want to piggyback off what the other man just said. I was having this conversation with my son today, and I was talking to him about just being a man, that me raising my son pretty much as a single mother and having relationships and different things didn't work out for him, although he's a grown man as far as age, he's still not a man, because in our community, we lack so much of different type of elders, different elders showing our young men how to become men. You know, everyone thinks, you know, they say that one phrase, I'm a grown man, but you don't know how to be a man. And I think that when a black man understands that and is able to be open to getting the help to learn how to be a man, that's one part of helping our black men, because they are under attack, especially the ones that don't have that sense of self. Then when I look at it from a social, economical, cultural place where we have people that are in the LGBTQT community, and I was watching the MTV Awards, and there was a guy on there, and his name was Lil Nas. And Lil Nas, I don't really know enough about this particular artist, but I know enough to say that it brought up another question to my son. He says, Mom, this guy is really not gay. He believes that the industry because everyone has came into this, everything is so okay. Let's just say that. The world has came, everything is so okay in the United States that people put on a persona to be this type of a thing. So now we have these young children, young African-American men thinking one way, but it's really supposed to be another way. So we live in a world of confusion. So that's another way that our children are being attacked. They're black young boys, and then they grow up to be black young men, not knowing if they're heterosexual or if they're bisexual, if there are all these different types of things that's going on. But then when we go all the way back, the black man was attacked from slavery. You know, everything was taken and stripped from him through slavery, you know, when his wife was raped in front of him, when he couldn't do anything to help his family. So it's in the DNA for us to have been attacked way, way, way before we got to present day. So we have to learn how to be able to embrace it, talk about it, and have more, I feel, more black men as mentors into our community to bring self-awareness and have those conversations with these men that say they are men, but they really haven't learned how to be a grown man yet.
Your response to your question, Mr. DeMaurice?
Yeah, I definitely see it's a new attack on black malehood, manhood, and it's also trying to, and this was predicted back in the 60s and 70s, to feminize black manhood. And you see that a lot now. You see that a lot in movies. You see that a lot in television shows where you have black shows that all of a sudden, and I have nothing against the gay and lesbian community, but when you have shows and the storyline has to put in a gay black male in there, especially a male who has a strong character in it, you have to put a black male in the movie. You have to put a black male who is gay in television shows. I definitely see that it's a way to feminize black manhood, because black manhood is very strong, it's very stern, it's unmistakable. But it just seems like this conscious effort in music and in film and television and any kind of creative kind of industry to feminize black malehood. And I had this conversation with some young black men at the university I work for, and they see it. And it's almost like if they're making a conscious effort, and this is coming from some of these young men, if they're making a conscious effort to feminize it, I'm going to make a conscious effort to make it more masculine, to not shy away from being who I am, to show my true strength and my true manhood. Because sometimes we get to a point where some people want us to dial it down. And talking to these young brothers, they were like, no, I'm not dialing it down anymore. If you can't handle it, so be it. But I'm not going to let you feminize black male.
Yeah. You know, I will say this, though. What I find to be interesting is that, just my personal opinion, when I hear what they're doing, they cannot do what we don't allow them to do. They can't. It's not like they just come in and strong arm and basically kind of make us, you know, turn feminine, whatever the case may be. We basically, realistically, in my opinion, as black men, when we basically stand and keep our mouth shut and don't say something about it, you kind of open the door to make them think it's okay. And, you know, we all don't want to speak out against the LGBT. We take that stance. But then, and realistically, we don't like it, but we don't say anything. I remember when Dwayne Wade, his son, you know, he came out, and when people came out against what they didn't like about his son, they got more flack for standing up about it and saying it than his son being who he was. Free country, do what the hell you want to do. But my point is, as black men, if we don't like something, say it. You know, stop trying to be politically correct, because we have never been politically correct, as far as I'm concerned. But when it comes to that, we want to act like it's okay. We want to act like, yeah, well, you can do it. No, you can't do whatever you want to do. Not just damaging us as a race of people. But we don't think in that terms no more. We want to be too kumbaya, and we allow some of that to take place. I believe, you know, Lady Marcy or Lucky Marcy is here, and I want to bring in the question, if you are here, in a sense that we just asked the question, is black manhood under attack? If your response to that question, please.
It's interesting. I was just kind of listening to what y'all are talking about when I first logged in, and I was watching, I can't remember, it was some kid's show I had my nieces watching, and it was like a, you know, one of those little action figure cartoon type of movies, and they went all the way through the movie, they got the bad guy or whatever, and at the tail end of it, there's a scene where one of the little boy characters says, it's time for the baby to be born. And the baby was in the boy's stomach. And then they kind of pull him over to the side and they show the belly, and the belly is like wiggling and all of these sorts of things. And they ask the question, well, how does the baby come out? And his eyes just kind of get big, or where does the baby come out at, or something like that. His eyes just get kind of big. I was shocked. I was absolutely shocked. I consider myself very open-minded about a lot of things, but I just felt in that moment when I saw that, it's too much. It's too much, and it's not so much. I think you said we only do what we allow them to do, and I don't necessarily agree with that when I see things like that, because that's superimposing an underlying message to children before they're even old enough to interpret the message. One of the studies that I do is on how people learn, and so cognitive behavioral therapy. And we form our foundation for our beliefs from 0 to age 7. So basically that's the time period in which we learn through observation and experience how we should handle things. This was a movie directed towards that age group. So they're coming up in a world where that's the norm, and there's blended lines and blurred lines now. I saw a picture of what Russell Westbrook, I think he was at the Met Gala awards, and he's got on, I don't know if you want to call it a kilt or a skirt or what, and he's got blue hair and this tight little sweater thing, and we perpetuate a lot of stuff. But I think that if we start seeing situations where they're going for children in things that are not, people aren't born. Boys aren't born to have babies, right? So when you start superimposing messages like that, and then you see superstars dressed in dresses and all kinds of different things, then I just question what is it that we're teaching kids, because it's not at that point, like with a Westbrook type of thing, that's not them imposing anything on us. That's us co-signing.
I've been saying that for Westbrook for a while. I've been saying that for him. I will say this to piggyback what you said about this show. I do think also we have to really pay attention to what our kids are being exposed to. We do. And a lot of times we allow our kids to see some things they really shouldn't be watching and paying attention to. Come to you, Mr. Charles, if you have a question for us, sir.
Yes. I've been talking to a lot of friends that are African-American, that are older, and they're pretty much single, or they're divorced or something to that effect. And it's not so much about the romance part, but the discussions went into we as African-American people and how we go along our day to day and how we get along. We all know that we have our families and whatnot, but there was a time, and I'm not saying everybody's like this, but there was a time where we all were concerned about our culture and our people. But even to the point of, I guess my question was to them, as to what will it take for us to come back together, truly come back together and support one another? Because I think there's so many things I've heard, seen, read, that where people go through things and they feel like they're by themselves, and collectively, even if we're strangers, for the most part, it feels like we're distant, where that we might, a few guys might do the head nod or we acknowledge one another, but in some ways it just seems like we're so distant. So I guess my question is, what will it take, and is it possible for us to come closer as a people?
Leitha, I'll come to you with this for your response first.
What it is that I feel that we need to do in our culture is to love on each other. Love on each other. Love your people. Love their progress. You know, if you're, you know, support your kind. Support what it is that someone else is doing. You know, I just say love on your people. That's the only thing that I know how to do is love on my people. Let people know that I'm there for them, even if it's not reciprocated the same way. But when we love on each other and we are kind to one another and we're gentle to one another, we can come together. Will it take a while? Yes. But it can start in pockets. It can start in your home. It can start in your community. And then it can go wherever you go. You're to carry that peace and that love with you. So if you see your brother or your sister and they look good or they're doing well, be able to congratulate that. Because if we do that more, we'll be able to say, wow, thank you. You know, I appreciate that. Like, you know, go ahead, King, you look good. Or go ahead, Queen, you look fabulous. If we do that in our community more, I believe we'll be able to bring some sense of wholeness back to one another.
Lady Marcy, your response, please.
I definitely agree with everything she just said, as far as being able to uplift one another. But I also think that technology has taken away some of the sensitivities. We're desensitized to violence. We're desensitized to abuse. We're desensitized to so many things. And then people can get behind the keyboard and all of a sudden they got, you know, a certain level of perceived power and things like that. And I think that has been very divisive. So I definitely think, you know, just creating a sense of community, and it starts, like she was saying, like it starts in the homes. It starts with what we're teaching our children. It starts in the schools and so forth. But because we have to focus on the generation coming behind us in order for them to grow up with a foundation of unity. Like we grew up with a foundation of community, with a sense of identity, and I don't think kids today necessarily have that.
Interesting. DeMaurice, your response, sir.
One of the things I think we need to do is educate ourselves about who we are. We don't know who we are. A lot of us do, but many of us don't, because we have been taught by a system that has miseducated us. We have this individualistic kind of brand on us where that's not our nature. Our nature is a people who are communal, who look at the collective, but we moved away from that because we live in a society that values more individualistic views and how to get things. And I can get mine, but I'm not going to let you get yours, or I'm going to get everything I can get materialistic wise, but I don't care what happens to you, because as long as I have it, you know, I'm not concerned about you. And so we really have to reorient our people and ourselves about who we are and who we truly are, and move forward from there. Because until we get to that point, you're going to have folks in our community who will continue to live as individuals and sell us out every time. And it happens to us all the time. We have one who will buy into what society wants them to be in order to sell out and to just keep the status quo going, where we're divided, we're fighting into each other, we don't know who we are. They keep us so busy in the muck that we really truly don't get to know who we are and whose we are so that we can move forward together. And it's more about I'll get mine and forget about yours, because as long as I have mine, I'm not worried about, you know, people who look like me who have that. We had this with W.E.B. Du Bois and Booker T. Washington. Both wanted to uplift the people but had different philosophies in doing that. And we created these two Black Americas, the haves and the have-nots. And the ones that are supposed to be part of the talented 10th to bring the rest of the 90th up, it never happened. It never happened because it's like, I can't live in the same neighborhood and I can't do this. I can't associate with you because, you know, you're not in the circles that I'm in. And so we have this, we've lost our way as far as the natural sense of being African and being African in the diaspora and working as a community. We lost that sense. We live in a world where we don't care about what happens to our neighbors. Hell, we don't even know our neighbors most of the time. We used to live in communities where we knew everybody in the neighborhood and everybody looked out for us. When we were little, Mark, everybody looked out for us in the neighborhood. We couldn't do anything that somebody wouldn't find out and tell our parents. I challenge you to find that in neighborhoods now, in Black neighborhoods now. You don't find that. The neighborhood doesn't care. Matter of fact, if you talk to my child, I might pick up a stick or a gun and shoot you because I didn't like the way you talked to my child. So we've lost that. So until we re-educate ourselves on who we are and reorientate ourselves to being that community and loving each other and all that other stuff, then it's going to go awry with the way it is now. Now, I live in Chicago, and it's definitely going awry.
You know, I was going to say, and you kind of went there, I grew up in a village. So to me, I experienced what Mr. Charles is basically asking. And, you know, coming up, that was always there. So to me, it got lost somewhere. The compassion for others, the speaking, the loving the other, and where you felt a kinship and you felt something wrong and you hurt if your brother or sister was hurting. And there was a sense of Blackness that we had back then. So I believe it's possible again because that's what I came up knowing. And at some point, it just dissipated. I can't say it's exactly when, and I will piggyback on what you said. I think it became more about personality, individual, you know, me succeeding and not feeling that we all should succeed. But realistically, man, I was raised in a time when that's what it was. That's exactly what it was. It was a time when basically – you know, Black people basically loved and honored each other. And it may be because I came up when it was kind of just kind of coming out of the civil rights movement. That's why I was there. But I cannot act like I never seen it, never experienced, never grew in, had it, because I did. So, but I know it's not there anymore. And I mean, I think some good responses saying I can get back to it. But I think it's real simple at the end of the day, man. It's just, you know, you have to love your people. I'm not saying you can't love others. But a simple, common-sense love for your people. And that should basically start to connect and bond us. If we can just do that, that's not a lot of work. It's just love. It's just simple love. And if I love you, I don't want to see you hurt. I don't want to see you die with something trivial. I don't want to see you do dumb things. I want to help you to be better, to strengthen you. So it's to me, that's simple. I'm not saying it's easy to turn the switch. But, yeah, we had it. We had it. Where did it go? We had it. Your response to your question, Mr. Charles.
Yeah, I don't have a lot more to add because that was wonderful. I want to thank y'all for that. That was wonderful, everyone. Seriously, that was like, wow. I think that's right on point. The only thing I would probably add, which is, as it was said earlier, is starting at home. Because there, I know I live an hour and 15 minutes from where I grew up at. And when I go home, oftentimes it's usually for a funeral or something. With some bad news. And when I get home, or even if you go and you have for a birthday or whatever, the majority of the people there that are relatives don't even know each other. That was unheard of when I grew up. We knew everybody. We knew all of the relatives. I remember my great-grandmother had a rule that on Father's Day, everybody that lived in the area or were connected with said family members that were headed out, the family heads, the kids had to come back. And unless you live like in Timbuktu, you better find a way to be there. You better have an emergency. Because at some time during that weekend, you were expected to be there so you could be seen and people could check on you and you were shown love. And my great-grandmother did that. And my great-grandmother ended up with, she had several daughters and one son. And they were some of the strongest women I've ever known in my life. And they just did that. That's how it was. And they never took away from anybody else, but they were strong. And it's just a point of, we don't even have that now. I told them, I've used the excuse, unfortunately, that if I live closer, I would do it myself down home. But I'm running out of that excuse because it's too close. But I agree 100% with everybody's saying. So I thank y'all for that.
Ladies, share your question if you have one to ask, please.
I do have a question to ask. It's going to go a little bit differently than the questions that we had, but I was wondering, do black men really court women? When I mean court, meaning that do you really court women? You know, oftentimes when women are dating, you know, you go out on maybe a couple of dates and then you know, they want to get right to business. But which way do black men look at courting and waiting and being abstinent, you know, from sexual kind of things? I really want to know what your thoughts are.
Excellent question. Yeah, I am. I plan to. And I want to say this because I came up with this a little while ago when we were off. I want to do a show. It's going to start out with the topic's going to be soul of a woman. And I want you, Lady Tashara, you, Lady Marston, I'm going to add another person. And basically, it's going to be you all will basically tell us what we need to hear about a woman. And those shows that we do, the start will be soul of a woman, but the other shows we're going to do, and when we do those shows, it's going to be, that's when black men listen. We're going to sit back and listen. So I want to say that first while I answer your question. But the answer to your question is no, we don't. We really don't. As black men, we don't. We may not even understand the true meaning of courting, in a sense. Because a lot of times black men now tend to date just to get what they're trying to get. So they're going to basically come with, as you said, to try to basically have sex, not necessarily trying to understand who you are. Because a lot of men basically date on their visual presentation that they see. It's not your personality they're taking out to the dinner, to the restaurant. They've taken out basically your physical stature. And they may start to learn your personality, but that is the honest-to-God truth. So when you say courting, that was a long time ago. Courting back then was essentially, yeah, you found someone that you may had an interest in that you thought they could be something and you can have something together. But realistically, the day of 2021, no. Black men about courting. First of all, black men don't want to spend the money to court. They just don't. They realize in a sense that they have spent money in the past and it hasn't gone where they want it to go. So they're more tighter on their funds. And with some women, they don't have to court. They know this. There's a group of women that there's no courting involved. So why are they going to spend time on someone and money on someone that they should, if they're not looking to be long-term and have it develop into something, they're not about the courting. They don't understand the courting process. That word is probably foreign to a lot of black men and many age demographics. It's severely foreign. Mr. DeMaurice, your response, sir.
Yeah, I used to, but I don't anymore. And what black men have figured out, and a lot of men have figured out, is that women outnumber us. We don't have to court. And especially if you're a man, a high-value man who has something going for themselves, you know, you know, you're living well, you live in a nice home, you know, you got a lot going for you. You're kind of a first round draft pick. So no, we don't have to court anymore. The game has changed. And so, I can tell within a 5 to 10 minute conversation, whether or not I want to be involved with a woman that I'm talking to that I found physically attractive, and I can just cut it off just like that because I'm not going to go into the courting. And also it's gotten to the point where you have to show me what how you can enhance my life. And it didn't used to be like that. It used to be men had to go out there and wine and dine and all that other stuff. But I think men, I know especially in Chicago, we don't court anymore. We let you do the work now. You have to court us as women. You have to prove yourself
wow.
as women.
I'm sorry.
You
I
have
to say,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That?
Because ooh. Why? Give me a reason why I should date you. Give me a reason why you're worthwhile for me to spend time with you. It's not. It has flipped because it's like 10 to 12
okay.
to 1. So if you're not at that quality, I can go to somebody. There's somebody else that's waiting in the wing. And that's what we have figured out here.
Mr. Charles, your response. You know, sometimes the truth pain ain't don't taste good.
I should have went. I should have went first.
I'm just saying. You know, sometimes the truth don't take like strawberry.
I'm going to give it to you.
Oh my God! Anyway,
I always wanted to know that. I just wanted to know that. Well, go ahead, Mr. Charles.
No,
go ahead, Mr. Charles.
Okay, I appreciate it.
I love this. I love it.
I do agree. I think things have changed. There was a time where I know I was raised to court. That's how I was. You know, you do that, but now. Having experience, and it was brought to your attention because you talked to some of the guys, and it's like, do you realize the number of women, the ratio of women to men? And you think even more as you think about our folks, and then in particular your age group and whatnot. Then it was like, wow, I tried to do the right thing. I was always the nice guy, and you always taught that be the nice guy, be a gentleman. And then after a while, you start spending money and whatnot. Not all women are like this, but sometimes you go, hell, she ended up with that bum because he was a slicker talker. He had a little bit more than me. Well, he's not going to be in for the real deal. He's not going to be a long-term guy. And then after a while, you go, well, I have anyone for me. Well, you just kind of go like, shoot, I keep finishing last. And it's like, well, why am I going to keep doing that when, as Dee Marie said now, you can afford to step back because now the numbers have changed. And as he said, if you have put the work in and done with them and got yourself together as far as your life and you present a great overall package, what you bring to the table, yeah, you really don't have to court. And if you do, you choose who you court because now you're more or less as – we're seeing more as more of a prized possession because of what we can bring to the table. And I think a lot of times that's misunderstood because men look at it now like, psh, I'm not doing that. I don't have to. And I think that's really sad because there was a time where you have a lot of lonely men and women out there and some women out there that just were looking for good men. But now the game has changed, so some men are like, psh, I don't have to do that. And again, last but not least, there are some women, unfortunately, that don't have to be courted. They kind of go along with the program. If that's what a man is into, they don't make a man court them. They don't make the man wait. They don't make the man wait longer than he should so he can really understand and prove that he cares about her more than what he can do with her on the first or second night. They don't do that. They don't require that. And the man's like, well, hell, I'm gonna roll with it. Do I say that's right? Hell no, it's not right. But I think that's part of the society we're living in right now, unfortunately.
I say this, it applies to a lot of things when it comes to black men and black women. And here again, some things may not taste good. Courting is a traditional thing, very traditional. But in the current day times, most black men see this. Black women want a traditional man, but they want to be an untraditional woman. So you have to decide, you want to be traditional or untraditional. Because if you're untraditional, don't look to be court. You can't. And if you want to be traditional, then you walk that path. But there's certain things of tradition that are basically no longer exist currently. But when it comes to dating, some people still want that traditional courting. And I think even we've said some reasons, but I think there's other reasons why men just say, and I'm not about the number game. I'm just not saying because there's more women than men part of it, and I understand that. But for me to even think about Courtney, you must represent something, character of a woman, something more than just basically of a physical being. And realistically, when you start to think about Courtney, somebody like Mr. DeMarie said, you have a short conversation, and their mind and their conversation is all whack. Hell no, you ain't courting them. For what? What are you courting them for? For what reason? If they can't put together a good sentence and everything is about me, who the hell wants to sit down at a conversation and hear about you all day? So it here again, these are some of the things that black men may just not say automatically, but that's their actions. That's what it is. So that courting is long gone. It is. It's long gone. Basically, I guess that's how Netflix and the chill night got started. Netflix is cheap. $11 a month? It's cheap. But we know what the chill leads to. So that's hopefully we did your question some justice because
wow. It's so crazy is because, you know, you sit back and you just think about different things, and I just wonder, do black men do that? You know what I mean? Like, I've never known one to really do it, but I just wondered if they ever did it. You know, because you would hear about, you know, way back and, you know, back maybe before my time. But I just wonder what is the mindset of men and waiting and doing different things now. You know, I just wonder.
You ask, we'll give it to you.
That's right. That's why I have a panel of men. I love it.
And as I said, I really want to put together where we listen because, you know, it's a learning process. Not saying we don't know some things, but we still can learn. And I'm glad you brought that question. It made me chuckle because you don't ever hear that word anymore. Curtain is a word that kind of doesn't – courtin is a word that doesn't really exist. But I just think the dating process has basically changed. And realistically, it's too time-consuming. Forget the money. It's just really too time-consuming because you spend all this time for a person that you just may not even like. And I'll say this too. I think as older brothers – we're not chasing anymore. We stopped chasing a long time ago. We just don't believe. It's like sometimes let the game come to you. And stop all that chasing and hooting and hollering and running. That's for what? Realistically, for what? What are you chasing for? So that's part of the courting process, too. It's like, who got time for that? You know, basically, who got really time and energy to really be doing all that hooting, hollering, and chasing? And as we kind of said, when you wait, sometimes the game comes to you. It just will come right to you. You'll be surprised the game comes right to you. And then you decide you want to play or you don't want to play. So, yeah, that is kind of like the thing on courting. We only have like a minute and a half, so I'm going to kind of wrap this up a little early. But I want to thank everyone for basically contributing what they brought to this. You know, talking about forgiveness is not an easy thing. It kind of basically have you look inward and speak outward. And that's what we do. That's what we do here. But again, we will at some point do a show and a few shows where, as me, myself, Mr. Maurice, Mr. Charles, we're going to listen. We're going to have, and we're going to sit back. It's going to be when black men listen. Probably those shows I will be drinking as I listen.
You ain't listening, a little tuned up.
But you know, I'm all about being straightforward. That's going to be out there. Y'all have a good night. I appreciate it. We've been touched soon. It's when black men talk. Appreciate it.